Hello, and welcome to the Kind Briefing, Concrete Steps to Protect Unaccompanied Children on the Move, hosted by Wendy Young, President of Kids in Need of Defence. My name is Lisa, and I'm your event manager. During the conference, the lines will be on listen only, but if you do require assistance, please just press star and zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties the conference is being recorded. And now I'd like to hand the conference over to Wendy Young, President of Kids in Need of Defence. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for today's telebriefing on concrete steps to protect unaccompanied children on the move, which is KIND's new blueprint for the next administration. As reporters who cover this beat regularly, we really appreciate your taking the time to listen in, and we look forward to taking your questions at the end of the call. This has certainly been a unique election, followed by an unprecedented time of transition to a new administration. For KIND's clients, however, it's far more than political theater. We truly believe the change in administration could be life-saving for thousands of unaccompanied children seeking safety in the United States. Our new blueprint is a clear roadmap for restoring fundamental protections and services for unaccompanied migrant children. It also gives clear guidance for how the Biden administration can restore the U.S.'s compliance with existing domestic and international laws that are in place to protect both children, asylum seekers, and refugees. But before we look ahead, I'd like to take a moment to focus on the challenges that lie before us. The current administration has eroded fundamental legal protections for unaccompanied children on the move, separated thousands of immigrant children from their families, including more than 600 who continue to wait to return to their loved ones, and it has systematically implemented policies designed to persecute, not protect, these vulnerable kids. In addition, our nation continues to grapple with more long-standing immigration challenges that the next administration will inherit and need to address. Some of these policies will be easy to reverse, while others will take more time. But at KIND, we are ready to roll up our sleeves and start to undo the damage of the past 4 years. During today's calls, two of KIND's top experts will address domestic and international opportunities detailed in our blueprint for the next administration. Among the many important issues they will address are included ending the current administration's border closure policies, including lifting the Title 42 border closure policy and restoring compliance with the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act, or TVPRA, halting the separation of children from their parents and rectifying the situation of those families that remain apart because of the Trump administration's unlawful zero-tolerance policy, ensuring access to counsel for all unaccompanied children in their immigration proceedings, investing in foreign assistance programs and high-level diplomacy to ensure that fewer children are compelled to flee their home countries to begin with in search of safety, and reviving and expanding the Central American Minors Program to protect at-risk unaccompanied children through a robust refugee resettlement program in the region. KIND is looking forward to working with the next administration to make these and other changes. We're also looking forward to providing more detail about these plans during this call. So without further ado, I'll turn the call over to Jennifer Podkol, KIND's Vice President for Policy and Advocacy, and then she will be followed by Lisa Friedman, our Vice President for International Programs. Jen?
Thanks, Wendy, and thanks everybody for joining today. So as Wendy indicated, over the past 4 years, we have watched an intentional rollback of crucial protections for unaccompanied children. But these came as no surprise, because back in January of 2017, the Trump administration laid out their roadmap of the attacks that they were going to launch against kids seeking protection in the United States. Although many of their goals were thwarted by Congress and the courts who refused to support these attacks, the administration used executive power to skirt federal and long-standing policies that helped ensure children had a fair opportunity to have their story heard. We have outlined every single one of these policy changes on our timeline that's on our website, and our recently published blueprint outlines exactly how the new administration should undo the most egregious harms and implement practices to actually improve conditions for these kids. So first, I'll start talking about family separation. So the Biden administration must act immediately to protect families impacted by the government's devastating family separation policies and to prevent future harm. So the president-elect stated he would create a task force to lead this work. And so at KIND, we believe the task force should work on the following priorities. first ensure that every relevant piece of contact information for separated families in the government's records is turned over to the non-governmental steering committee established by the federal court to help reunify families so that we can continue this work. Provide funding as appropriate to support the steering committee in carrying out our work, conducting outreach, and increasing capacity. Work with the steering committee and civil society organizations and relevant governments in countries where parents are located to find the families who are outside of the United States. They should be putting in place policies and procedures to help parents return quickly and safely to the United States so that they can reunify with their children. They should make immediate immigration reprieve options available for separated families to ensure their stability and prevent deportation, and work with Congress to create a pathway to permanent lawful status for separated parents and children. They should ensure that all parents and children, either in the U.S. or abroad, are compensated for the pain and suffering that they have endured, and that they have access to mental health and other critical support services needed to begin their healing. And finally, because family separations did not end with the executive order ending zero tolerance, and we regularly see continued needless separations by Customs and Border Protection officials, the task force should identify and implement policies to ensure that family separations never happen again. Next, the Migrant Protection Protocols and the CDC Title 42 order closing the border to unaccompanied children and asylum-seeking families must be rescinded. Both of these policies have had devastating consequences for children asking for protection at the U.S. southern border. KIND has served children subject to MPP who have been rendered unaccompanied when terrible things have happened to their parents while trying to wait for their court hearing in informal camps along the border. Additionally, the CDC order directly violates the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, requiring that unaccompanied children be screened, sent to the Federal Child Welfare Agency, and put into full legal proceedings. Whistleblowers have confirmed that the CDC order blocking children's access to protection is not necessary to protect against COVID transmission, but rather was used as a tool by the administration to circumnavigate Congress and the courts and to turn children around back into the hands of traffickers, smugglers, without any concern for their well-being. There is no doubt that the Biden administration will have a Herculean task to rein in the virus and do what is necessary to protect the American public, but dumping kids in other countries without any concern for their protection will not make Americans safer. The administration can safely process children in a way that ensures their safety as well as those who will be caring for them until they can be reunited with family. The current CDC order already allows for exceptions to the border closure. So the Biden administration can either fully rescind the current order and restart the processing, or they can instruct DHS to consider unaccompanied children as an exception to the order due to their vulnerability and to conform to the law. Finally, as an organization that works to provide counsel for children, I would be remiss if I did not mention the importance of ensuring every unaccompanied child obtains legal counsel for the duration of their case. Now, obviously, without counsel, children cannot be expected to go through the complex and adversarial legal process of asking for humanitarian protection under U.S. law. Additionally, counsel plays an important and protective role for the kids. So for many of these kids, the attorney is the only adult with whom they have a confidential relationship and who has eyes on many aspects of their lives, like treatment in government custody, needs in adjusting to a new home once they're reunified, potential risks to exploitation or trafficking, and social service needs. So attorneys play a crucial role in ensuring children receive the necessary referrals and support they need to finish their immigration cases and are successfully integrated into their communities. So in order to ensure that all children have counsel for the duration of their cases, which would comport with 8 U.S.C. 1232, which requires ORR to ensure children have counsel, the administration should instruct ORR to fully fund the legal services program and require robust funding through future appropriation cycles to ensure that there is adequate funding to support this growth of the program, and should be funding both direct services as well as pro bono facilitation. So I will stop there, and I will turn this over to my colleague Lisa, who will discuss the international opportunities for the next administration.
Thanks, Jennifer, and thank you all so much for joining us today. I'm going to touch on a few areas, in particular, the root causes of child migration, the importance of really going back to the drawing board on diplomacy, and refugee resettlement from Central America. Starting with root causes, as KIND and many other organizations have been saying for years, children in Central America are fleeing their countries to escape widespread violence, including child abuse, gender-based violence and sexual violence, violence by gangs and other organized criminal groups. Weak and underfunded judicial and child protection systems in these countries leave children with nowhere to go for protection, forcing them to leave their countries and to seek safety elsewhere. The violence children face is compounded by extreme inequality and discrimination and the devastating impacts of climate change. These root causes of migration have been exacerbated by the COVID-19 crisis and more recently by the impact of Hurricane Eta. COVID-19 has only worsened the major drivers of child migration and in particular gender-based violence. Central American countries have imposed strict lockdowns during COVID, leaving children trapped at home with abusive caregivers, even more vulnerable to violence and with nowhere to go for help. In El Salvador, just as one example, there's been a significant increase in pregnancies among girls ages 10 to 14 during lockdown. Many of these are the result of sexual violence by family members. Gangs have also continued to operate during COVID, and in some cases, they've used violence to enforce curfews and other COVID-related restrictions. Hurricane Eta has deeply impacted communities throughout the region, especially in Honduras and some parts of Guatemala. Homes and crops have been destroyed and thousands have been displaced, including many families with young children. Many of these families have been forced to stay in shelters and other crowded living arrangements, placing them at even greater risk for COVID-19. These effects of the hurricane exacerbate the gang violence, the gender-based violence, the child abuse that I just talked about, as well as corruption, which caused so many kids to leave. As communities in Central America face the devastating impacts of these multiple crises, widespread violence, COVID-19, and Hurricane Eta, children and families who cannot find safety at home will be left with no choice but to migrate. Make no mistake, this is not about the results of the election. This is about people coming for the reasons I just mentioned. The Trump administration took a punitive approach to diplomacy and foreign assistance to Central America, at one point even withholding over $500 million in assistance appropriated by Congress to address the root causes of migration. The administration turned a blind eye to the root causes, and Central American governments took full advantage of this disinterest, for example, by removing bodies focused on ending corruption and impunity, and by increasing their own restrictive policies and human rights abuses. The Trump administration's policy toward Mexico and Central American countries had the near exclusive focus on stopping migration, and the administration achieved cooperation through threats. It is time for a new approach if we really want to resolve these issues, one that involves working in partnership with the governments of the region to reduce the drivers of migration while also ensuring access to protection for those seeking safety and addressing humanitarian needs. The Biden administration's message to Central American governments should be: prioritize protecting the rights and well-being of your own citizens so they can make a choice to stay home, and you will find a committed partner in the U.S. to achieve this. Given the dire situation facing Central American countries, U.S. assistance is more urgent than ever. As Vice President, Joe Biden understood the importance of addressing the problems that force children to migrate. As President, it is critically important that he make this an early and an ongoing priority, with the focus on strengthening democratic governments, ending corruption and impunity, preventing violence, and strengthening judicial and child protection systems. When it comes to engagement with Mexico, rather than pressuring Mexico to stop migration northward, a strategy which has proven ineffective at halting migration and has honestly only forced children to take even riskier routes, the Biden administration should work with the Mexican government to strengthen its own asylum system and access to shelter and assistance for migrants in Mexico, as well as send the clear message to the Mexican government that the U.S. will uphold its own legal and moral obligations to those seeking safety at our border. And finally, turning to refugee resettlement, the Trump administration slashed refugee resettlement, cutting annual admissions to historic lows and further reducing the refugee ceiling each year, reaching a new bottom with this year's ceiling of only 15,000 refugees. In addition, the administration terminated refugee programs such as the Central American Minors Refugee Resettlement Program, or CAM, a program that brought over 3,000 Central American children to safety in the United States before its termination. President-elect Biden's promise to raise the cap on refugee admissions to 125,000 is welcome news. Kind strongly recommends that the Biden administration revive the CAM program, but importantly, an expanded and improved version of the program to ensure that children with international protection needs can be brought to safety through an orderly process and without having to take the dangerous migration journey. In addition, we would ask the administration to scale up programs like the Protection Transfer Arrangement, or the PTA, through which Central American families are processed for refugee resettlement to the United States in their country of origin, or following transfer to Costa Rica for those who can not safely remain in their country during processing. Now, the PTA is currently in existence, so scaling it up is, there's a pathway to do that, and obviously there is a blueprint that existed for the previous CAM program. And of course, we're asking to improve it and expand it, but the United States has the experience of having stood it up before. So these are practical measures that we think will go an important important distance. It's going to take this type of regional response, the United States working with Central American governments and Mexico in true partnership to solve the problems that lead kids to flee, while also shoring up access to protection throughout the region and including access to the United States reopening pathways to refugee resettlement. Thank you so much, and I'll turn back to Wendy at this point.
Thanks, Jen and Lisa, for those great overviews. And at this time, I'll ask our operator, Lisa, to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please just press star and then one on your telephone. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. So just as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please just press star and then one on your telephone. The first question comes from Camilo Montoya from CBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, all. Thank you all for having this. I appreciate it. My question is, obviously, you've laid out some suggestions that you would like the incoming Biden administration to implement to change the policies in regards to unaccompanied migrant children that the Trump administration has implemented. To revive the CAM program, for example. Are you concerned, however, that even if a Biden administration does, for example, revive the Central American Minors Program and does exempt unaccompanied kids from the CDC expulsions order, that they're still going to have policies of deterrence in place to try to deter folks, including unaccompanied kids, from crossing the U.S.-Mexico border, and to keep policies in place like the third country asylum ban that also includes unaccompanied kids?
Thank you. Lisa, do you want to start on that and then Jen add to it?
Oh, I would suggest actually Jen starting.
Sure. Thanks for that question. Yeah, I mean, the reality is it is a very long list of what the new president would need to do to unwind all of the terrible policies that we've seen, right? And I think we've really seen this administration try to double down on this idea that you can deter away a refugee situation, right, which we know you can't, right? The numbers don't lie. Regardless of the, you know, incredibly horrific policies they put in place, people still felt compelled to leave their homes. So I think, you know, as we're thinking through what are the practical things that can happen, there's a lot that can be done very quickly in a short amount of time. But it's there's going to be piecemeal because we're going to need, you know, there's going to be certain steps to take. One obviously very important thing is even just having access to U.S. protection in the first place, right? So that includes MPP, that includes refugee processing, that includes the ACAs, you know, that you indicated. But then the second part of it is that how do you process these cases in a way that's fair but also efficient, right? It's not fair for kids to have to wait years for their cases to be resolved, right? They need to really think about what is the internal mechanisms and what changes do they need to make to ensure that they can make sure the process is a lot more efficient than it has been. It's going to require putting resources both to refugee processing as well as the applications for protection, you know, inside the United States as well. Lisa, I don't know what you want to add.
I think just that there is, you know, we would hope, and we, and from the experience working when President-elect Biden was vice president, there was an understanding of the root causes of migration, which I think is really helpful to understanding the need that people have for protection. But, you know, just as I sort of said, the importance of working with Mexico on also strengthening its own asylum system and really looking at strengthening access to protection throughout the region creates additional options, which are very important.
Got it. And one follow-up, I'm sorry that I missed this question, is, as you are probably aware, the Mexican government this month basically banned immigration civil detention of children, both unaccompanied and those with families. Do you ever see that happening in the U.S.? And then if so, how do you think the U.S. can get there?
This is Jen. I can start and then turn it over to Lisa. Yeah, I mean, that was a remarkable development, you know, and we all watched that with lots of joy, you know, knowing that the Mexican government is really going to implement, you know, their progressive laws and make sure that there isn't punitive detention for kids. Now, I think the important thing to think about for the U.S. context is we detain kids in lots of different ways, right? There's Customs and Border Protection processing, there's ICE, family detention facilities where accompanied kids are held, and then there's the ORR facilities that are intended to be care and custody only until a family member can be found. And so I think really thinking about what are the different ways children are held in federal custody and making sure that we eliminate every time it's done for punitive reasons, right, when it's not necessary. And if it's being done for protective reasons, right, because you can't drop a six-year-old off at a bus station in the middle of the night in Brownsville, Texas, right, and say, you know, good luck getting to your mom in Chicago, we need to make sure that we're implementing absolutely appropriate standards for kids and that kids aren't staying in government custody for any longer than they should have. So I think ensuring that ORR has adequate oversight to make sure that it's really living up to Congress's goal that it be, you know, short-term care and custody only until a child can get back with family will be really important.
Thanks, Jen. And it's Lisa. I just wanted to add, and we are really excited about the development in Mexico. It's fantastic. There's obviously going to be a lot of work on implementing it. And just to let folks know that, you know, KIND now actually has staff in Mexico working both in Mexico City, really focused on policy. And so we'll be engaged in those discussions on moving from law to implementation, as well as staff along the northern border, Mexico's northern border, that's really providing legal information and assistance to unaccompanied children along the border.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. We do have another question in the queue, but as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please just press star and then one on your telephone. The next question comes from Gloria Turen from the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having the call. My question was on something that I don't think I heard that well. Can you talk again about the part of waiting in Costa Rica? Can you explain a bit more about that option and for what program were you referring to?
Sure, I can start if that's okay. This is Lisa. That's the protection transfer arrangement. It's a refugee resettlement program available for adults and families from Central America. The numbers have been pretty low. The numbers have been quite low of individuals benefiting from that program during the Trump administration. But it's a program in which individuals from Honduras, El Salvador or Guatemala, and again, as I mentioned, families can be processed for refugee resettlement to the United States or additional other countries. The U.S. isn't the only country for which people can be processed for resettlement through this program, and some individuals are remaining in their country. So if you're Salvadoran, you may be remaining in El Salvador during the process because it does take many months to go through the interview and the security screenings and all of the steps. The travel visas, permissions to leave. But for individuals who are unable to safely remain in their country during processing, there is the potential option of being moved temporarily to shelter in Costa Rica during that processing, with the idea that ultimately the person would still be, for example, if they were being processed for resettlement to the United States, that that's still where they would go. They wouldn't remain in Costa Rica, but they would be able to live safely in Costa Rica during the processing. Now, I will just say during COVID, the actual transfers to Costa Rica have really slowed because of concerns, but there is some discussion about those moving forward, and there have been some individuals who've been in Costa Rica during the number recent months. There's just been fewer cases moved to Costa Rica. So does that answer your question, or do you have another question about it?
Thank you. Yes, it answers my question.
Thank you. We do have another question. The next question comes from Julia Preston from the Marshall Project. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for having this call. I actually have two questions. One is, I wonder if you could bring us up to date about how the extent to which kids are actually succeeding in the legal process in getting visas and permission to stay in the United States. It kind of looks like they've been hitting the wall once they get into court. And so if you could just give me a quick update on that and what you see as the most important thing to do to alleviate that problem. And also, I wonder if you would address the concerns that I think are unspoken in the Biden transition team at this point, that somehow his election, and particularly after the hurricane and the factors that you cited, is going to unleash a new flow from Central America and particularly of the kids. How would you address that concern that isn't going to happen, or if it does happen, there could be ways to make that become an orderly process?
Thanks, Julia. Jen, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the way kids' cases are being processed, you know, when I referred to the timeline that we have on our website where we track all the policies that affected the way kids' cases are put through, I mean, it's really remarkable all the administrative levers that they've pulled to make it cases. So we have, I mean, kind right now is hundreds of cases where a child has an approved special immigrant juvenile visa, meaning the U.S. government has already said this child was abandoned, abused, and neglected, and it is not in their best interest to return to their home country, but they can't get their visa because the immigration court judge won't calendar the court date so that they can adjust their status and get their green card. Not because they're not eligible for it, but because the immigration judges aren't, you know, ruling on motions in timely ways. The immigration court judges can't set up, you know, they don't have the power to use administrative closure or other techniques to make sure that the cases are being processed in a way that's efficient, but also allowing USCIS, the other branch of DHS, to adjudicate their application for humanitarian protection. So we're seeing these incredibly frustrating ways, not because the kids can't win their cases, they just can't squeeze their way through the court case. So, you know, and I referred earlier about, you know, really thinking about how to maximize efficiency in the court process. It's crucial for these kids to finally be able to get some permanency and some closure on their cases. In terms of the numbers, I can start and then Lisa answer as well. Look, I think we've seen, you know, through two different presidents, high numbers of refugees needing to flee Central America, not because what's going on in the U.S., but because of what's happening in their countries of origin. We've seen horrible policies and harm done to people who are coming here asking for help, yet people still have been coming. So I think we really need to think about, you know, the chaos that has, you know, been ensued, and the, you know, refugee camps that have set up, and, you know, caravans were still coming here under the Trump administration. So I think we need to take a longer view of the numbers and really realize that the numbers have been high for a very long period of time, and that's because of what we're seeing of what's happening in the country of origin as opposed to what's happening here. Now, how do you restore order from chaos? That's going to be, you know, the president-elect's responsibility to try to restore some order, restore the rule of law, you know, through these series of recommendations that we've laid out in our blueprint, which include reopening, you know, refugee processing in countries of origin, giving people other options, right, building up regional protection so that people have options, but also ensuring that we always absolutely allow for territorial access and have a system that can quickly adjudicate somebody's claim for protection. I don't know if you want to add anything, Lisa.
I just, you know, I agree with everything that you've said, Jen, and just that I would probably add, you know, we have seen also a stronger, we are in a stronger situation in terms of the number of organizations involved, the number of places of shelters and others available to support people during the process, like as they're moving right through Mexico and along the U.S.-Mexico border. Jen could talk more about ORRs, you know, better position, being better positioned to handle children than you know, higher numbers than we've seen in the past. But as Jen said, it's absolutely not new, and I really would, you know, kind of for all the reasons that these causes, the sort of the causes that I was talking about before that Jennifer just reiterated, these are long term. And the only difference we've seen, it's really not about who's president or the migration policies, as Jen said. I mean, what we've seen more than anything under the Trump administration is actually that children have just had to come in riskier ways. Not that they've stopped coming. You know, they're trying to come and not be detected rather than present themselves at a port because they've understood they can't get to a port. We've seen an increase potentially, we've heard of more cases of children disappearing in the desert. You know, our own staff at Mexico, we're hearing more of these cases. And there's just greater risks that people are taking because the message has been clear, okay, if the U.S., you're not going to get processed in. But, you know, that doesn't mean that people aren't coming because the need has definitely been there. Yes, during COVID, there was a temporary period of the numbers being down, but that's because there were severe restrictions on movement in Central America. And as those are lifting, we've already heard, you know, conversations about people needing to move because of those causes, but not because of a political, you know, not because of who's president. And that's very clear talking to organizations in the region, talking to individuals in the region, that the level of feeling of insecurity, the level of violence, the inability to access healthcare right now, you know, lack of, you know, all of these causes are just absolutely exacerbated. And so that's really what the conversation is. It's not about who's president. Event.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please just press star and then one on your telephone. The next question comes from Mika Rosenberg from Reuters. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just had two questions. One about sort of what you foresee could be possible in the remaining weeks of the Trump administration. There's, you know, policy, there's regulations that have been proposed, including a big one on asylum. You know, would it be possible, you know, do you envision some of those being finalized, and, you know, how could that complicate things for the transition? And then the other question is about the asylum agreements with Central American countries in terms of what might be needed to reverse those, and, you know, if they could just sort of be ignored, or if they have, there has to be, you know, a whole other round of negotiations with Central American governments to, you know, rescind them, and what do you see happening on that front?
Thanks, Jen. Well, I think on the regulation front, it's, you know, we're playing a a game with the calendar, right? How many can they get out before January 20th? And so, yeah, we have lots of concerns that there's going to be other ones that are coming out finalized. I mean, you mentioned the asylum regulation. I think, we're worried that there's going to be a regulation about people being denied access to asylum if they have any sort of health conditions, right, that could be broader than just COVID. And there's a lot of regulations, I think, that they've put out in the Federal Register that we haven't seen final versions yet. You know, this administration has relied very heavily on putting regulations out in the interim final status already. And so, you know, there's a lot that can be done. To your point, I think it's going to be a combination of strategies of, you know, litigation, issuing new regulations, rescinding pending ones, that the administration is going to have to figure out how to prioritize and how you attack it depending on the posture of each one. In terms of the ACAs, Lisa, do you want to take that one?
Sure. In terms of ACAs, I mean, I think the most immediate thing, I think it's really probably a two-step, you know, process, which I think the most immediate thing is that the U.S. just doesn't implement them. In other words, the U.S. does not send people back, you know, to Guatemala, to Honduras, to El Salvador to force them to seek asylum there rather than at the United States. That's the quickest and most immediate step, but I don't think that's going to be good enough longer term because it's, I think, extremely concerning and problematic that these agreements are out there, that the language is out there around them, and that the agreements exist in terms of really long term looking at what these agreements do not in any way comport with what meaningful access to asylum or to protection is. And so, and also we're done, as you know, we know, very much under pressure from the United States. So I think it's important to go back and actually rescind the agreements in each of the countries, and that I do think that that will take some conversation. I think if the United States is really showing its good faith commitment to receiving and processing people, that the countries will not have a problem rescinding the agreements. And that these agreements were never, you know, the Guatemalan asylum system has absolutely was not ready to receive the Hondurans that were being sent there, the Salvadorans that were being sent there to seek protection. So, again, I don't think it's going to be a complicated, you know, process to rescind, but I do think it's very important to rescind. So step one, immediately do not apply them and make very public the United States is not applying them and will work in a process to rescind them. And then I think number two is the discussions to actually rescind them. Jen, I don't know if you have anything to add.
No.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please just press star and then one on your telephone. There are no further questions in queue. I will hand the conference back to Wendy.
Thank you, Lisa. And thanks, Jen and Lisa, for answering those questions and for your great overviews. And thanks to all of you for joining today's call. I should note that if you'd like to read our full blueprint, it's available on our website at www.supportkind.org, as well as other resources. And we look forward to keeping in touch with you as we prepare for the transition to the new administration. So with that, I'll just say thank you and have a great day. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. That concludes the conference for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining and enjoy the rest of your day.